The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the daily Kitzur Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzur365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Shmuel Selinsky.
Today's topic is Chadash. We're in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Kuf Ayin Beis 172, and the Hilchos Chadash, the laws of the new grains, and in it are three sections. Okay, so our first thing is, what exactly is Chadash? The two words to learn here are Chadash, new grains, and Yashan, which are old grains. So to get the full picture, because there's a lot of confusion about exactly what's going on, I want to draw a picture about what happens in the time of the temple. The grains grew, people would plant them, and then as the harvest time comes, it's forbidden to harvest any grains, any of the five species. That's wheat, barley, oats, rye, spelt. Any of those, it's forbidden to harvest, forbidden to eat, until the Omer offering was brought on the second day of Pesach. Once the Omer offering is brought, then it's completely permissible, harvest, eat, whatever a person wants, that's fine. Just for clarity, for the bigger picture, it's still forbidden from those new grains, even though one could now eat them. It's forbidden to one should not bring a korban from those grains, a grain offering, a mincha offering, until the two loaves were offered on Shavuot. On Shavuot, there's a special musaf. Besides the musaf offerings, there's a special offering, and that is the two loaves of wheat bread, actually. It's a it's the only chumetz public offering. That allowed new grains to be brought into the temple. So, okay, the Omer, even though the Omer offering was barley, it's the earliest ripening grain, and it was harvested on the second day of Pesach. It even overrode Shabbat. And people could harvest, the harvesting was done. Then it is taken into the temple. It was parched, it was ground, and it was made into an offering. And this barley was the first of offerings brought into the temple. The first of the grain offerings, in the temple and of that year, and that permitted people to eat. Again, people couldn't bring a grain offering themselves until Shavuos comes along. But so far as eating goes, that permits it. The Sefer Henoch has a very interesting view on this. Just as we don't eat grains, we don't eat food at all until we make a bracha on it. First, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for having such things in the world. Then, we can eat. So, too, it's not appropriate to begin eating of the new grains until we, so to speak, give HaKadosh Baruch Hu his due. Bring a korban for it, and that's our thanks for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is fantastic. Of course, God doesn't need our offerings. That's a whole other issue. But to bring that offering to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then we can eat the grains. It's like saying the bracha before eating anything. Okay. Now, this iser of not being able to eat from any of the grains until the Omer offering is brought, that is what we're talking about. The new grains before the Omer is brought is called Chadash, new grains. And the old grains, which is just a figurative term, Because as soon as the Omer offering is brought, whatever grains are around are called yoshan, the old stuff, and that's perfectly fine to eat. It could be brand new chronologically, but it's called yoshan, old grains, because the Omer offering is already brought. And by the way, bringing the Omer offering covers not only the grains that are around at the time, but anything that's growing in the field, any seed that has already rooted, is covered by the Omer offering. Okay, so as long as grain was planted, let's say a few days before Pesach, and has already started to grow, it starts to root, then it's called covered by the Omer, and that's fine, that's perfectly fine once the Omer offering is brought. Again, the Omer offering was brought on the second day of Passover, second day of Pesach, which is the 16th of Nisan, and for those outside of the land of Israel, where we keep 2 days of Yom Tov out of the doubt, so, and also we would keep 2 days for the grains, the Chadash, because when is the Omer offering brought? The day after the Pesach. So we call it the 17th day of Nisan. In other words, the entire day of the 17th outside of Israel, we would say it's forbidden to eat the new grains, and on the night of the 18th, as soon as the 18th of Nisan starts, go for it, all the new grains are permissible. What if someone planted grains after that time, in the spring or summer or whatever, after the Omer offering has already been brought? In other words, they didn't root before the offering. The seeds didn't start to sprout at all. They were only planted after the Omer offering. Well, that stuff is our Chadash, and that we have to wait until after the next Omer offering is brought, the following Pesach, in order for that stuff to be permitted. Okay, just to get a little more clarity on it, we're going to take a look at the Pasuk in Parshas Emor. It's in Vayikra, the book of Leviticus, and it's chapter 23. Okay, and it's verse 9 starts the whole section. Okay, and Hashem spoke to the children, spoke to Moshe, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel. Tell them, when you come into the land of Israel that I'm giving you, and you reap its harvest, then bring an omer of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest, to the Kohen, and he'll wave the Omer before the Hashem to be accepted for you, and on the day after the Shabbat, meaning the Yom Tov, the Kohen will do the wave offering. That's the 16th. The Shabbat here refers to Pesach, the Yom Tov, when work is forbidden, and the day after that is when we would bring it. And in addition to that, there's an offering of a lamb without blemish, of a one-year lamb, for an ola offering to Hashem. And the meal offering is 2/10 measures of fine flour mixed with oil, an offering made by fire to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a reich nihoach, a nice smell. And there's also the drink offering, the libations of wine, a quarter of a hin. And now the bottom line. This is verse 14. 23:14 in Vayikra in Leviticus. Okay, and you will eat. Let's take a look at it in the Hebrew. V'lechem, and bread. V'kali, and parched kernels. That's like puffed wheat, that kind of a thing. V'karmel. This is grains which are still soft, which are crumbled in the fingers. There are other opinions that it's a flour made from the parched grains. Lo sochlu, do not eat them. Ad etzem hayom hazeh, until this very day, that day in which the Omer offering is brought, ad haviachem es korban elokeichem, until you bring that korban of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, hukas olam, it is a law forever, the Doroseichem, for all your generations, which means not only in the time of the temple, but even after the time of the temple, and all your generations, b'chol moshevoseichem, in all of your dwellings. Well, all of your dwellings is an operative term, and that means not only inside of Israel, but also outside of the land of Israel. Okay, now, let's take a look, with this background, let's take a look at what the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says in Kuf Ayin Beis 172. Hilchos Chadash. Aleph. Kasiv, it is written, and this is the pasuk we just read, v'lechem, v'koli, v'charmel, the bread, and parched grains, and soft grains, the fresh grains that are crumbled in the hands, lo soklu, do not eat them, etzem hayom hazeh, until this very day, etc. Now, whenever you have an etc. in a text, it's very worthwhile to look it up because a lot is going on in there, and very often if that's brought, it's being referred to. As we saw in the pasuk, it says, in all of your dwellings. And that's important for us. And in all of your generations, which means even not in the time of the temple, and even outside of the land of Israel. Perush, the explanation of this, Sha'asurin le'echol, it is forbidden to eat mituvua chadasha, from the new grains, mechameshes ha'minim, from the five species, and again the five species are wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. It's forbidden to eat from those five species ad la'achar hakravas ha'omer, until after the offering of the omer. The hakrivu, that it was offered, b'shishas of Nisan, on the 16th day of Nisan, u'bezman she'ein omer, and in the time where there is no omer, we don't have a temple now, unfortunately, kol hayom asurin, all the day is forbidden. In other words, it was permissible once the offering was done. You could eat those new grains immediately, as soon as the offering was done, on the afternoon of the 16th of Nisan. However, now that we do not have the temple, the entire day is forbidden. Levenei Chutzlaretz, and for those who live in Chutzlaretz, outside of the land of Israel, She'osim Yom Tov Shnei Yomim Machmas Sveika, who keep Yom Tov for 2 days because of the doubt, when exactly is the time going to be for the Yom Tov? So Gam Yom Yud Zayin Asura, even the 17th day of Nisan is going to be forbidden. Ad Hilas Leil Yudhet, until the night of the 18th of Nisan. A person can make Havdalah on the second day of Yom Tov, of Pesach, and immediately dig into those new grains. Fantastic. Okay. Utavua shenizra, and grains which were planted, v'nishasha, and rooted, kodem tetzayim v'nisan, before the 16th of Nisan, ha'omer hazehi tira, the omer permits them. So even though you don't even see much growing in the field at all, as long as it's rooted, and that may take even just 3 days, but as long as it has rooted, those grains which grow up and will be harvested later in the summer or even in the autumn, mutares miyad, they become permissible immediately, lahar katsirasam, after they are harvested. So grains which have rooted before the Omer is brought, before the 16th of Nisan, are called permissible to eat immediately upon their harvest, and one does not have to wait until the Omer comes again. Aval, but if they did not root before the 16th of Nisan, Asura Ajiva Omer Haba, they're forbidden until the next Omer which comes along. So if grains were planted after Pesach, and they root only after the 16th of Nisan, one has to wait an entire year practically until the new grains, until the next Omer offering is brought in the following year, and then those grains become permissible. As we go on, we'll see, though, what actually applies here. Base. L'das rov gedolei haposkin. According to most of the great poskim, the great rabbis who do poskin halacha, isur ze gam b'chutzlaretz hu min haTorah. This is forbidden also outside of the land of Israel from the Torah, as we saw. Kol Moshe Boseichem, in all of your dwellings, it says. Ulechein, and therefore, tzarichi lahashkiach ma'od b'tavua. And therefore, one needs to be extremely careful with the grains. Shenizra lefamim, because they can be sown sometimes, achara Pesach, O samuch lifnei Pesach, or they can be sometimes grown. They sow the seeds either after Pesach or very close to before Pesach, and then it would happen shelo hishrisha that they didn't root kodem tet zayin b'nisan before the 16th day of Nisan. Kagon, for example, saorim v'shibola shaul, such as barley and oats. Those could be sown afterwards. And again, we're talking about this sefer, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, was written in Europe. So we have to see how this applies in other areas of the world too. But for right now, this is what he's saying. Ubiktsats makomos gam chitin. And in a few places, even wheat is going to be an issue. And when this happens, that these barley, oats, or wheats are planted after the 16th day of Nisan, she'masurim ad la'achar yudzayim b'nisan haba, that they would be forbidden until after the 16th day of Nisan that comes the next year. In the parentheses it says, what if they actually gave root? They rooted on the 16th day itself. They are permissible on the night of the 16th of Nisan that comes from a logical way of looking at things, that however we're going to look at it, it would be permissible. Whether it's already called rooted and therefore it's perfectly fine, or it's okay. Vegam hashechar, also beer, hanasim itvuzu, which is made from this grain. Right? Beer is made from barley. That's going to be an issue. Asur ad la'achar Pesach haba, it'll be forbidden until the next Pesach. V'chein hashmurim musurim, and also, let's say people make sourdough, and they the sourdough, which is a yeast together with the flour, or shmurim could just refer to the brewer's yeast, which is often a byproduct of the brewing process of beer, but it's a health food that people eat some. In any case, that also, if it came from the chadash stuff, from the new stuff, that is going to be a problem and asuri. V'imchintzu behamisa, if it soured a dough, like it's used to not sour, if it was used to make a dough, to make a bread, even though of a filu mitavu yashana, even though the grains are old grains, but the sourdough that's used is from the hadashta, kola iso sura machmas ishmurim. The entire dough is going to be forbidden because of the shmurim, because of the yeast. It's still recognizable. We don't say it's bittel. We don't say it's nullified, even though it might be just a little bit. No. It caused the whole thing to rise. You know that it's in there. It's, forget it. The entire bread is going to be forbidden. Tavua shemistapkimba. Grain that we are doubtful about. Im yashana im hadasha. If it's yashan, if it's the old stuff, if it's the new stuff, I don't know where this stuff came from. So then what we're going to have to do, ya'asu aleha shailus hacham. Ask a Talmud hacham. Ask somebody who knows about these things. There are many rebbeim out there. Ask them. Okay. Gimel. The yesh omrim. And there are those who say. Now, before we get into this, what did the Ketzer Shulchan Aruch say? Any grains that were planted after that rooted after the 16th day of Nisan are going to be forbidden until the next 16th day of Nisan comes around. Okay. And if we have a question, we're not sure of it. By the way, beer made from that barley would be forbidden. Anything made from those, even a sourdough that's made from that, is going to be forbidden. The bread would be forbidden. So now, in Gimel, he says, Yesh Omrim, there are those who say, the Enis or Chadash Ela B'Tavua, that there is no Isser of Chadash, except through grains, Shagat L'Berushus Yisrael, that grew in a domain of a Jew. Jewish grains, if it's a Jewish farm, then we have our problem. But if it's a non-Jewish farm, then we don't have a problem. V'afilu hasada shayeches l'goy, even if it's going to be that it's the field is shayech to a goy, the field is owned by a non-Jew, Elisha Yisrael Schora, that a Jew rented it from him. That's still going to be called in the domain of a Jew because he's the renter. It's, so to speak, his property, his crop at this time, and therefore of Yesh B'Tavuazu Isur Hadash, and there would be in this grain the Isur of Hadash. Of all, but B'Tavuazu Gadlu B'Rashus Goy, if the grain grew in the domain of a non-Jew, it's his farm, or, okay, Ein bo Isser Chadash, then there is no Isser of Chadash. Okay, this is a huge heter. Okay, now there's a question whether or not this leniency applies inside the land of Israel or not. And again, one should ask a Talmud Chacham. That's what the star with the footnote tells us. Al zeh somchim harbe, and on this a lot of people rely. B'shas dechak, in a time that is difficult. In other words, if there's not going to be anything to eat, well, people would rely on that. Mikol makom b'tavua, in any case, with grains. Shagadlu b'rshus Yisrael, that grew in the domain of a Jew, ein shum heter, there is no way to permit it, even if it's going to cause hardship. I'm sorry, people have to get their grains from somewhere else if it is a situation where they themselves, it was their own Jewish farm. Okay? Of all, but Rabu HaChokim There are a lot of those who argue upon this heter, but only when they say, the God B'shel Goy, aka Isser Chadash, even with the grains of a non-Jew, there is the Isser of Chadash. The Hamachmirim, and those who are strict upon themselves and keep the Isser of Chadash, even from the grains of a non-Jew, Tavol of Bracha. They should have a blessing come upon them. Okay? And the footnote says, and it's fitting and proper to be stringent over here. There are other heterim also for the new grains. For example, the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch says there is a sveka, there's a doubt. Maybe these grains are from last year. Maybe they're from this year. And even if they're from this year and it was planted, maybe it was planted maybe from this year's grains, it was planted before the Omer, before the 16th of Nisan, and it was planted after the 16th of Nisan. So that's another way of permitting the new grains. And by the way, most hechsherim in the United States say they'll have that the stuff is kosher, the food is made with kosher ingredients, and so far as actually is it chadash, is it yeshan, it will not say. So it will have the heksher on it. There are those who do have specifically yashan heksherim, and you will see on the package that it says yashan. I want to emphasize that many say if anyone wishes to take upon themselves yashan, that they would only be eating from old grains, they should say bali nader, because in a case of emergency, in a time of stress or whatever, and it's they can't find the stuff, again, they may find products that have a good hexer on it. It just may not include whether or not it's chadash or yashan. So, please, if you're going to do this, say it b'li neder. Now, let's take a little look at the crops themselves and see exactly what's going on. So, first of all, there are two major planting seasons. There's what's called a winter crop, which is planted in the spring, in the autumn. The grass, the grain begins to grow. Then it goes dormant for the entire winter. Then it grows in the spring when it gets warm again. And then it bears its grains and is harvested. A lot of grains are grown this way. Grain in general prefers moist weather while it is growing, and dry weather while it is ripening. So this is a very, very common type of growth pattern. There is another type of growth pattern in which the grains are planted in the spring. And those that are planted in the spring will grow up, ripen, and in the late summer, in the fall, is when they will be harvested. So our problem really occurs with the spring-planted crops. Now let's go through the five species and see what the actual issues are. So first of all, rye and spelt. Rye is primarily grown as a cover crop. It's a pasture. It's grown over an empty field. It is pasture that the animals will graze on it. And then it's plowed under and it rots in the soil, and that's called a green manure. That is the majority, a large portion of rye is done that way. A quarter of the rye which is grown is actually harvested for the grain. Okay, and those that are used for the grain are the ones which are planted in the fall and harvested in the summer. So since it's planted in the fall, it's already rooted. when the Omer comes along in the spring, the 16th day of Nisan, it's perfectly fine, it permits it, and once it's harvested in the summer, it's terrific. So there's no problem of Hadash, so far as rye goes, it's always going to be Yashan. Bear in mind, when a person buys rye bread, that in the standard rye bread has a mixture of rye and wheat, so we still have to talk about wheat. However, the rye itself, and there are people for health reasons who use strictly rye flour, that is going to be perfectly fine all the time. Spelt also is fall planted and spring harvested. Spelt is a special form of wheat. It's different enough that it has its own classification, its own name, and that also has no problem of chadash, because it's planted in the fall, Pesach comes along, and then it's harvested either before or after the Omer. In any case, it rooted beforehand, so we have no problem at all. Now, oats are going to be a possible issue. Fall oats are planted in September to December, and they're harvested in, let's say, late May to July, even as far as September. So, fall oats are going to be fine. However, spring oats, which are the majority of oats that are planted in March to May, possibly early June, and they're harvested July to October. That means the problem of Hadash is only going to happen at the end of summer or in the autumn, in the fall. Bear in mind, though, when we said maybe it's from fall oats, maybe it's from last year's spring oats, but also, even if it is from the spring oats, it's going to depend upon when Pesach was. Maybe that particular one was planted before Pesach. Maybe it was planted after Pesach. In any case, oats could potentially be a problem of Hadash, so one should, if one wants to keep Hadash, be on the lookout for it and keep and ask a Hakam who is aware of exactly what's happening in that particular year. Okay? Barley also has a similar situation. There is spring barley planted, which is the majority of the barley crop. And that harvest begins in July and September, October. So again, we're talking late summer to autumn as to when the barley hadash may hit the market. Again, let's take a look. From the autumn, let's say, when the new crop hits the market, until Pesach is going to be the time period that we have even any concern whatsoever. Once Pesach comes, everything's going to be fine until the next spring-planted crop may come in. By the way, we should add into the equation the fact that modern storage techniques are fantastic, extremely efficient, and grains can be kept a very long time, so it's not unreasonable to say that something may be from the past year's grain. Okay, now, wheat. Wheat is the big one. Okay, 35% roughly of wheat is spring wheat, and 65% of all wheat is basically winter wheat. Okay, we're talking a huge quantity of wheat is winter wheat. Again, it's planted in the fall, it goes dormant in the winter, it ripens the following spring, and everything's fine because it was clearly planted before the Omer, and then, even though it's harvested afterwards, it's going to be fine because it rooted before the Omer. Our issue is going to be spring wheat, which planted but somewhere between March and May means that maybe it was planted before Pesach, and rooted? Maybe not. It's going to depend when Pesach comes in any particular year also. So the spring wheats are going to be the issue. Again, somebody who really wants to investigate, ask a Chacham, because it's going to change from year to year, etc. There are packages on the market that clearly say Yashan, old wheat, and the hechshers that we have that are reliable hechshers, there are, as we say in times of difficulty, there is what to rely on, what the kitcher brought, the Ramah, and good eating to you. Have a wonderful time. If one keeps Yashan, please say Bali Nader. So in a case of an emergency where they're stuck, they're not going to be stuck. They won't have to undo a vow. And may you be very successful. Hatzlacha Rabbah.
The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the daily Kitzur Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzur365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Shmuel Selinsky.
Today's topic is Orla. We're in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Kuf Ayin Gimel, that's 173, Hilchus Orla, the laws of Orla, Ubo Dalet Sifim, and in it are four paragraphs, four sections. So Orla, before we actually get into it, let's get a clear idea of where it comes from and what it is. So essentially, the first 3 years in which a tree is planted, those fruits produced in the first 3 years are forbidden, completely forbidden, forbidden to get any benefit from. In the fourth year of that fruit, of that tree, that fruit has a special kind of sanctity to it. It's called Netaravai, the fourth year planting. And that either is eaten in Jerusalem or in a state of purity, just like Maaser Sheni, or it is redeemed and the money taken to Jerusalem and eaten in a state of purity, which of course we can't do these days. So then the fifth year, the fruit of the tree is completely permitted, and it's like any regular year in Israel. We will separate the Truma, Maaser, the various tithes, and outside of Israel, then it's free to go, ready to eat. Okay, let's take a look at it in the Chumash, because this is a Torah commandment. It's in Vayikra Yud Test, that's Leviticus 19, and we are about to start verse 23. Vayikra Yud Test Chaf Gimel, Leviticus 19:23. V'ki Sovo El Haaretz, and when you come to the land. Okay, now when you come to the land, seems to indicate it's a mitzvah that's going to apply only in the land of Israel. However, what we learn from this is that it begins its application once we come into the land, and then the concept of Orla will apply, but not before that. Unatatem kol eitz michol, and when you plant any type of a fruit tree. Okay, or latem, and it will be orla to you, or lasso. You will keep it as a forbidden. You'll be separated from this. There are many ways to translate orla. We're just going to call it orla, but it means it is essentially forbidden for you, es piryav, its fruits. Okay, shalosh shanim yiyeh lechem. 3 years it'll be to you, arelim. It will be considered this orla fruit, lo yeyachel. Do not eat it. Now hold on a minute. Once I know that it's called orla and it's forbidden to me, don't I know that I can't eat it? So this double language that it's orla and forbidden, and in addition that not to eat it, is where the sages learn that it's telling us, the Chumash is telling us, that it is forbidden to get any benefit from it. Usur hanah. Forbidden to get any benefit at all from it. Okay? U'bashana haravis, and in the fourth year, yakol period kodesh, all its fruits will be a kol period, all of its fruits, kodesh hilulim lashem. All of its fruits will be called kodesh, a type of sanctity, hilulim lahashem. Now, hilulim is going to describe the type of sanctity. It's the kind of a thing we would say hallel, that we would praise over. So those fourth year plants, where is it an appropriate place to come and praise Hashem? That will be in Jerusalem. So here we see that it is to be eaten inside Jerusalem in a state of purity, just like Maaser Sheni. And hilulim, the sages also learn from it, hilulim. Hilul is to turn something that was had a sanctity to it into regular, ordinary stuff. Kodesh lachol. Hilulim means it has the option of redeeming it. And then the fruit becomes regular fruit, and the money takes on the sanctity of the netter avai of the fourth year planting, and is spent in Jerusalem for food, drink, etc., for something that is eaten in a state of tahora, which, again, unfortunately, we don't have yet. We don't have in today's world without the temple. Upashana hamishi, and in the fifth year, we're in verse 25 of Vayikra Yutes, Vayikra Leviticus 19:25. Tachlu es pirio, then you'll eat the fruits, lahosif lachem tuvoso. And this whole process will increase for you your produce. It'll give you better crops. Hashem is giving us a very nice blessing if we keep the laws of Orla. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. I am Hashem, your God, and I keep my promises, says Hashem. Okay, that's where we see Orla in the Chumash. So we have our basic laws from it. By the way, when it says you come into the land, meaning that's when it begins, unatatem, call, it's my, and you'll plant any fruit tree, we see that it would apply also potentially outside of Israel, but let's see that a little further now inside the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. We're in Kuf Ayin Gimel, 173, the Laws of Orla. Aleph, call Eitz Michael, any fruit tree. Well, it's going to be an interesting question what's called a fruit tree, but let's basically call it a tree in which my intention is to eat its fruits. Bein shel Yisrael, bein shel goy. Whether it is a fruit tree of a Jew, whether it is a fruit tree of a non-Jew. Vehila batzitz, even if it's in a pot. She'en anukav, even if it's a pot that doesn't have a hole in it. And a pot that does not have a hole in it is often called something which is not a place of planting, and it would be exempt from the Torah for many things. However, so far as Orla goes, nevertheless, it will apply. Shalosh shanim harishonos, the 3 first years, minatisav, from its planting, haperus v'hagarinim, v'aklipos, the fruits, and the seeds, the pits, v'haklipos, and the peels, hakol aser b'hana. They are all forbidden to get any benefit whatsoever from this. Okay, let's examine this a little bit more. What does one do with something that's forbidden for get any benefit? Well, there's an asterisk in my edition, and below it says, "Ana v'tu'unin serefa." It needs to be burnt. Well, I don't know if you ever tried to burn a fruit, but it's not so easy. And if it's not fitting to burn, yikfuru, one should bury it. But when we say it's forbidden to get any benefit from it, that means even like to chop it up and use it as a mulch, to let it as compost for the garden. You can't do that. You can't plant the seeds from it. The stuff is completely forbidden. Don't use the peels for dyeing fabrics or anything. Nothing. No benefit. You can't dry it out and use it for firewood. Nothing. That's the first 3 years. And as a matter of fact, many say that the fruits should be removed so that people do not have a stumbling block and might come to pick it and eat it by mistake. It is not forbidden to look at Orla fruits, but what is forbidden is to get any benefit from it. So therefore, picking off the fruits as they form is a good way of avoiding any stumbling block with the orla fruits. Now, when we said that in any type of a planter, any type, anywhere in the ground, and this is regardless whether it's a Jew's plant, whether it's a non-Jew's plant, orla will apply. Whether it's a Jew's field, whether it's a non-Jew's field, if it is planted for fruit tree, then it is forbidden. However, there's a very interesting exception, and this is a halacha from Moshe Mi-Sinai. Rambam tells us it's Moshe Mi-Sinai, and that is, if it's a doubt whether or not it's an orla fruit, then it's permissible outside of the land of Israel. This is a very special type of a halacha. It's a very unusual halacha. Inside Israel, if we have any doubt, gee, maybe it's orla, maybe it's not orla, then it's going to be called forbidden until we can find out and figure it out. Orla fruits, if they're mixed in with other things, they're nullified 1 in 200. But if there's orla fruits on the market, it can get complicated. So ask your Rav as to exactly what's going on. And in the land of Israel, it's critical to know what's happening with orla for people who like to eat fruits. However, outside of Israel, Moshe Mi-Sinai, a halakha of Moshe from Mount Sinai, is that if it's a doubt, it is permissible. And doubt is outside of the land of Israel. And doubt outside of the land of Israel is an extremely lenient definition. If there's a whole orchard, let's say, that a non-Jew has, and it's almost all orla, except for, let's say, one tree in there, and he's selling a basket of fruits, you can buy those, because maybe it's from that one. That's doubt. We're not going after majority. We're going after, I don't know for sure that it's orla, it's okay, I can just eat it. You can't see him pick an orla fruit off of the tree. That's going to be forbidden, because you know it's orla. But if I have any doubt, it's permissible, and that's why outside the land of Israel, you can go to any market and buy fruits from trees and not have to worry about orla. Maybe it's orla, maybe it's not. There's a doubt, I don't know for sure, that's a problem. However, if you are planting a fruit tree in your yard, or you know when this tree was planted, you know, you're buying a home and it has a fruit tree, and the person says, yeah, it was planted 2 years ago. Or if you have a neighbor or even a non-Jew and you see when the tree is planted, then you know when that orla begins, and that's when our first 3 years are going to be forbidden. And this would apply whether or not however the tree is planted. However, we're going to get to that fairly soon. That's going to be in paragraph Gimel. Again, if I know that it's orla, I have to watch out for those 3 years. If I don't know that it's orla, even if I planted a tree and I forgot what year when it was, then when there's doubt as to maybe it is after the orla, I can rely on that. Or if it's a tree that I don't know how long it's been in its pot, I don't know, you know, there are many issues that can raise a doubt, then I can rely on this to not have an orla issue. Okay, we're still in Aleph, though. These 3 years, well, the Kitzur continues. Shalosh shanim elu, these 3 years. Elu monim, they are counted ein monim miyom liyom. They are not counted from day to day. In other words, if I plant that tree on May 1st of a particular year, I don't have to wait 3 years until May 1st comes around again, and then the 3 years are over. No, Ella rather, I need 3 halachic years, and we're going to say part of a year is like a year, and that's going to mean 30 days. So if I plant, if a tree is in the ground and rooted before 30 days of the year, and our year for Orla starts with Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah. So if it is in there before Elul, I have no problem, then that Rosh Hashanah coming is going to start year two. And how long does it take to root into the ground? Well, you should ask your rabbi about this if you're planting from a container, but let's say you're planting a bare root tree or just, basically we're going to say 2 weeks is the amount of time it takes to root, to establish. Then we will have the 30 days. So it's 14 days to establish, to root in. Another 30 days, that to call that part of a year as an entire year. And then our Rosh Hashanah is going to begin year two of the planting. So anything that's planted essentially on Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av or earlier, that Rosh Hashanah is going to start year two. Let's see it inside now. Shalosh Shanim Elu, these 3 years, Ein Moni Miyom Liyom. They are not counted from day to day, from the exact date, 3 years, till the next date, 3 years later. Elo, rather, Inata Kodem Tet Zayin Bav. If it is planted before the 16th of Av, meaning on the 15th of Av, even up until late in the day, Kevan Shiesh Mem Dalet Yom, since there are 44 days of Rosh Hashanah until Rosh Hashanah comes, Nechshav Lo Shana. That year is considered to it a year. Mishum, how does this work? Because, duh, that, Yudalet Yom, 14 days, Hema Yemei Klita. Those are the days of it catching on, of it establishing, of it getting rooted in. Then it's called growing in the ground. But Acharkach, afterwards, Lamed Yom B'Shana, Nechshav Shana. Afterwards, 30 days of that year is considered a year. V'shuv monashtei shanim mitishrei. And then further, what we will do is count 2 years from Tishrei. Rosh Hashanah is when it began. Okay? Now, again, I have a footnote here. And it's going to say from Tishrei, v'af achar siyum shtei shanim. Even after the conclusion of those 2 years, a dayan asurim, it will still be considered forbidden. A peiros, the fruits will be forbidden. Shechantu, if those fruits form, kodem tu b'shvat, the 15th day of Shvat, she'acharehem. That came after the conclusion of its 3 years. So let me say this again, hopefully clearly, that if one plants a fruit tree, even outside of Israel, they know when they're planting it, so the tree would have to go into the ground before Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av. When that happens, Rosh Hashanah comes and we're going to start year two. The next Rosh Hashanah comes, we're going to start year three. The next Rosh Hashanah comes, and the 3 years of Orla should be finished. However, what's going to happen is we're going to say from then until Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat, usually sometime in February, is going to still be forbidden any fruits that form then. If the fruits form beforehand, they're certainly forbidden. Even if they're still hanging on the tree when its Orla time is up, since they formed during Orla, they are considered Orla fruits and they are forbidden. And now the Kitzur continues, Aval, but, Inatum Yom Tet Zayin Ba'av Eilech, if they are planted from the 16th day of Av and onwards, La Nechshav Shanazos L'Klum, that year, that part of a year is not going to be called anything. You might get 5 weeks in until Rosh Hashanah occurs, but those 5 weeks are not going to be called anything so far as the Orla calculation counts. And then, Umoni Mitishrei, we will count from Tishrei Shalosh Shanim, 3 years. And those 3 years, we're going to wait until the next Tishrei, and there are many who say then the fruits that newly will form after that third year will be completely permissible. Others say one should wait until Tu B'Shvat, the 15th day of Shvat. Ask your Rav if you run into that situation. Okay, base. Bashana Haravis, in the fourth year, Nikru Peros Netaravai. Those fruits are going to be called the fourth year planting, Netaravai. That we saw in the Chumash has a level of sanctity to it, to be redeemed or to be brought into the Israel, into Jerusalem, and eaten in a state of ritual purity. We can't do that these days, so we redeem it. Ketzad Poto Son. So how do we redeem them? Tolshan. Okay, they are harvested, picked, removed from the tree. La'achar shid nigmaro kol tzorchan. After they're completely ripened, and they're nice, good fruits. V'notel matbeah. Now the person will have these fruits sitting there in a basket and vessel. V'notel matbeah. He will take a coin, whether it's kesef, money, o perus shel heter, shava pruta, or fruits that are considered permissible fruits that are worth a pruta. And many do not like using fruits. They say it should be done only on money. It has to have even a blank chunk of metal that's worth the equivalent of a pruta is no good. That one should use an actual coin. And you can use a coin, whether it's going to be a half shekel, 10 agarots, or whether it's going to be a nickel. Today, and we're talking the mid-November of 2013, a sheva pruta, the equivalent of a pruta, it's the smallest amount of money that there is, that, and it's still called money, that is in Israel considered 8 or 9 agarot, and outside of Israel it's maybe 4 cents, it's going to depend on the core price of silver, etc., but roughly speaking, it's approximately 4 cents. So you can take a nickel, maybe be on the safe side, take a dime to redeem your entire crop. It doesn't have to be for the face value. We can't eat the stuff. We can't do anything with it. The minimal redemption is on the equivalent of 1 pruta, the smallest coin possible. And therefore, we'll take that coin and we will redeem the fruits on it. Okay? And what will we do? He'll take this equivalent of a pruta, but Omer, the Kitzur continues, and he says, Bozer, ani poda peros netaravai elu. With this, I am redeeming the fruits of netaravai, of these netaravai. Boom, there it is. Okay? So the value of the fruits, the sanctity of the fruits, now goes onto that coin, and the fruits become permissible. The sanctity went off of them, it was transferred onto the coin. By the way, in Israel, one would make a bracha on this, and outside of Israel, one generally would not make a bracha. Again, ask your rav for details. So what do you do with the coin afterwards? For notem ha'mabeya, one takes the coin, o ha'peros, or those fruits, for shahakan, and wipes them out, for zork b'nachar, and throws it into the river. What I've done is given my kids a hacksaw and pliers, and they just bend the coin and destroy it. The coin must be destroyed. And outside of Israel, one should destroy the coin immediately upon doing the redemption so that no problem occurs of the coin being mixed up and being used and getting back into circulation. The aim of working b'chutz l'aretz al apidyon, and we do not make the bracha of redemption on fruits that are redeemed outside of Israel. Okay, there are those who say that only on grapes would one do this redemption, that the fourth year planting applies outside of Israel. But you can see the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch seems to indicate that it's on any fruit trees. Okay, now what is going on here? What's called planting a fruit tree that we're going to count from? Achad honoteh, it's one and the same if a person actually plants garin, a seed, or anaf, or a branch. They take a cutting and plant the cutting. Oh, sha'akar ilan, or they uprooted a tree. V'natov avakam acher, and they plant it in another place. Chayavim ba'orla, it will be obligated in orla. Okay, now this is talking about a situation where the root ball is not something that the plant could live with. If it's a bare-rooted tree, the orla starts when it's planted. Count the 14 days for it to root in, and then the orla would begin. The count. Or if it's a cutting that goes right into the ground, boom, start the count after the 14 days of the rooting. Or if it's moved from one place to another, however, if there's enough soil around the root ball that the roots are taken together with the soil, it doesn't crumble off, it doesn't all fall off, but the plant could actually survive with that much soil around it, then the orla count would not necessarily start again. One could keep the old orla count. Or if it's planted from a container that it grew in. Of course, one would have to estimate when it was planted in that container. And this can get rather complicated, and especially in the land of Israel, it's very good to ask a Rav exactly what the situation would be there. Okay, we continue with the kitzer. Whether or not it's a seed or whether it's a branch, meaning that it was a cutting that was taken and put into the ground, or whether it was moved from one place to another, the obligation for orla will apply. Aval, but hamarkiv anaf ilan acher, one who grafts a branch onto another tree. Okay, now grafting is the roots of one tree are there, and one takes a branch off of the top of a different tree and grafts it. They put it onto the roots of the other tree. They will fuse together and become one plant. This is, as we see in the next section, Kufay and Dalet 174, only permissible if those trees are considered the same species. But for example, if I have a golden apple and I want to grow more golden delicious apples, I would graft that onto an apple seedling or any other kind of an apple, and the top that grows will be those golden apples. Or that's how I get seedless grapes or seedless oranges. I can't do it from planting a seed. So traditionally what's done is it's grafted, but it would be orange on orange or it would be grape on grape. And if this is done, then we have two issues. We have how old is that cutting, the top, and how old are the roots? Well, the kitzer is going to tell us that hamarkiv anaf b'ilan acher, or also b'chein hamavrich, or if somebody does layering. Now, layering is where someone takes a branch of the tree, bends it down into the ground so the tip is sticking out of the ground. But a part of the branch is actually under the ground. It may be wounded. They cut it a little bit so that where the wound was, roots will form. It grows roots. The top shoot that's coming out grows. And then ultimately it's cut from the parent plant, from the mother plant. And one has, in essence, a brand new fruit tree, a new plant. Well, what's the story if someone does that? Now, the kitzer is going to explain what mavrich, berach means a knee. It's bending it down, and then the tip comes up, and where it bends and hits the ground is going to root. Dahena, that is, she'osa guma ba'aretz. One makes a depression in the ground. U'mashpil achad me'anfei ilon, and he lowers one of the branches of the tree. U'matmin emtsaso ba'aretz, and then he buries the middle part of that branch in the ground. Verosho yotze mitzad acher, and the tip, the end of the branch, sticks out on the other side. Afo pishahachu me'ikor ilon, even though it is cut off from the roots of the tree, once it's cut, b'chutz la'aretz ein bo mishum orla. Outside of Israel, there will not be orla applying to it. Not everyone agrees with this. I suggest you ask your Rav. And inside Israel, once it's cut, the orla count starts all over again, even if it's a three-year plant. It's been in there for the entire 3 years and growing, but once it's cut away from the mother plant, its new count starts again. ask your Rav about what to do. The Ilan Shenikzad, this is Dalet, Ilan Shenikzatz. What about a tree that was cut down? An old tree, everything was fine, but zoom, it broke off, it got cut down. Im Nishar Gov Gvoa Be'orot Tefach. If it is a tefach, that's a hand breadth, approximately 4 inches, 10 centimeters, extending above the ground, that much remains. Azai Masha Godol, then that which grows, Acherkach afterwards, Eino Chayev Be'orla, will not be obligated in Orla. It keeps the old count of all in Lo Nishar Tefach. But if a tefach, 4 inches, 10 centimeters, does not remain above the ground where the tree was broken, it's less than that, chayev ba'orla. One has to begin the count all over again. Umonin hashanim mishas ha'katziah. And count the years from the time of the breaking. It doesn't need to count the 14 days of rooting because it's already rooted. But the growth, the new tree, we're going to have to count it from the time that it was broken, cut off. The Elon and a tree, Shene'ekar, that's uprooted, V'nishar Mishor Shav Mechubar, but the roots are still considered, their roots are still attached. A dog dug up the tree. It fell over in a storm, whatever, any of these things, and a whole bunch of roots are poking out, but still there are roots attached, afilu rak ave machat. Even if the root that is still growing in the ground, still attached, is as thick as a needle, what kind of needle? Shamotchin bo habeged la'achariga, that's used for sewing cloth after weaving. That's a rather thick needle, but it's still not a very thick root. But you do it, then for sure it will be known, sheyechol lechios b'li toseves afar, that it can live without any additional earth. If there's that much root left, the tree can still live. Upatur, then it is exempt from counting orla all over again. Afilu hosif alav afar harbe, even though he may add a lot of soil back afterwards when he puts the other roots back in, nevertheless, that one root was still attached, everything is considered fine, and therefore, he doesn't have to start over again. There are many complications to the laws of Orla. You now have a very good introduction to it. That's what the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch does. And when questions arise, if you're going to be planting your own fruit trees, whether it's in pots, whether it's in the ground, then by all means, ask your Rav for guidance and enjoy the fruits that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us in this world. Thank you.